Welcome to Threads of Enlightenment, your journey into personal growth. The splendor of any decision is after you've made it. All that remains to be seen are its consequences. My name is Ken Primus. I am your host. Here at Threads of Enlightenment, we talk about the principles of self-development and personal growth. By having conversation with people who have walked through their journey of personal growth. We believe that everyone at some point in their life will have to deal with one or more of these principles to have the privilege of focusing on their self-development as humans. These principles, when applied, can help you to become the best self possible. Welcome to another episode of Threads of Enlightenment. And as you know, once our guest comes, we turn the table over to them and to have them introduce themselves so that you and I can get to understand how they created the world that they did and what tools they utilize, what fears they overcame to become the shining picture that they will give to us. And then you and I will go back and grab all that information so we can become better at this game, this time here as human spirits. Welcome to Threads of Enlightenment.
Thank you very much, Ken. I appreciate the invitation. I'm Sharona Lynn Wyatt, and I grew up in a household that I didn't feel that was safe. And so at the beginning of my diary in eighth grade, I wrote down, "Everybody hates me, but it's okay because I can hate them more." And so at that time, I thought I needed help. And so I started reading the Bible for myself. And I read it all the way through. I had to earn one first at the local church because there wasn't one in the household that I was being brought up in. And so by the time I earned it, it took me 6 weeks to memorize all the stuff that they did in their year-long program because I was in a hurry to get this Bible. And then I divided the number of pages that was there with the number of days left in the school year and said how much I had to read every night so that I would be done by the end of the school year. And at that time, it was like after I'd read it every night for quite a while, I started hearing a voice over my left shoulder. And I really thought that's why we were told to read the Bible every night, because then we would get the audio edition while we were reading. I really thought that happened for everybody. And so I started hearing the differences of and the filling ins of what would happen. So every year I took a different book and I would read it. So in ninth grade, it was the Bhagavad Gita. And in 10th grade, it was the Book of Mormon. And like I said, every year I would take a big book. Then starting on my 18th birthday, I started meditating. And I thought this was really important because my oldest sister had told me that people in the East, after 20 years of meditation, had this great connection with spirit and with our creator. So I decided that I needed to get started. You know, I look back now and why didn't I say, "Eh, that takes too long," you know, but I decided that I needed to get started. So I started on my 18th birthday and I meditated every day, twice a day, until I was 36 when I got this wonderful connection. And it was through that connection that I was guided to create this body of work. And it started when I was doing the seating chart for my seventh year of teaching. And I sat down, and you know, you randomly put down all the kids on a seating chart because you don't know them. But my brain was saying, "Don't put Josh next to Julie because together they're going to be clowns, you know, and Stephanie's going to be stubborn, put her over on the side. And Derek's going to need extra help, so put him up close." And it was when I was doing the seating chart for my fourth class, all of a sudden I went, "Wait a minute, this is how I think once I get to know the kids, but I don't know these kids." So I decided to go back and write down what I was getting as an impression off of everybody, because all I had was their name. And I put it aside until winter break because I wanted to get to know the students for who they are. And so when I read it at winter break, I was amazed at its accuracy. So I said, "Okay, my brain has figured out some kind of a pattern that's sitting in these names." Now, my brain is thoroughly trained in patterns because I was a math major and in college and I have my master's. So I thought, "Okay, how do I make what's unconscious conscious?" And so literally for 15 years, at 4 o'clock every morning, Spirit woke me up, asked me a bunch of questions that then I would have to go seek the answers for. And so I was guided for 15 years on developing this program that I call Namology Science. When I thought I had gotten all of it, like I said, after 15 years, I went and tested it. Now, I was already being invited to speak around the world on spiritual topics. And so I asked, while I'm talking on the spiritual topics, can I also introduce this Namology Science? And everywhere I went to over 70 countries, and everybody said, where can we find out more information? So then I came back and wrote the book. And the first book, Know the Name, Know the Person. And that was all about how to find out somebody's personality from the placement of the letters in their name. Then I wrote the second book, which is Know the Name, Know the Spirit, which is how to find out somebody's life purpose. Why are you here? And it even gives you the 7 subsets that if you can do these 7 things, then you've conquered your overall goal. All right. Then I wrote Know the Name, Know How to Connect, because people kept asking me questions and I thought it's all there. And they said, no, it's not all there. You know, we're not reading between the lines well enough. So I wrote the third book, which is absolutely accessible free on my website, any page but the homepage. So anybody can get that one free, where you just learn how to communicate with somebody and how they show love, how they receive love, how they learn, how you sell to them, how you make a long-term friendship versus a short-term friendship, you know, their learning style, what kind of gifts they like. It's all in there. Like, how do we connect with another person? Accessible absolutely for free. And then the next book will come out fairly soon. It's called Know the Name, Know the Health. So our health predisposition is also in our names. What we inherit through the family is sitting in our last name. What we have brought in with us that we've got to deal with health-wise is in the middle name, if you have a middle name. And what we're creating in this lifetime by our habits is in the first name, what the potentialities are. So the first name is the essence of who you are. The middle name is what you brought with you. If you have a middle name that says, okay, I'm utilizing these gifts and talents and I'm developing them further. And the last name represents our environment. So we have both nature and we have nurture. Okay, so we have both. And then in the first name, the first letter is the first impression of somebody. It's what we think about them right away when we meet them. The first vowel in the first name is how we're connecting to somebody. And then the last letter in the first name is our lasting impression. And those other letters in the first name is what I call the middle letters. And those are the letters that take a while to get to know somebody. Those are the ones that we're constantly surprised with. And then if we're consistent, if we're under stress or not under stress, that means that we don't have a middle name. But otherwise, when we go under stress, we go to our middle name. And then again, our impressions or who's trying to influence us to think differently or to grow and to expand, that all comes in the last name. So it's a system that I call you drop the first name and the last name. You drop the essence into the environment, and then you get to know the personality of the person. So our vowels represent our emotions and the consonants represent our attitudes. And so that's a brief summary of what I've done so far with me creating this body of work that literally gives us so much information. When I'm doing a reading for somebody, I ask for the parent names because I like to go through, why did your soul choose this mom? Why did your soul choose this person for a dad? And then how did they influence you? You know, and I look at that as a pressure cooker. How did they cook us? How did they, you know, help us grow coming up? And then as we change our name, how does that change how we go about our blueprint? But the blueprint for our life, even the timing, is sitting there in our birth name.
You started so young.
Well, I started when I was 13 in eighth grade.
Yeah, that is, to me, most of us, you know, most people, we start later, but you started young, investigating, reading. You were so inquisitive with wanting to know the fact that you went and studied the Bible, gathered knowledge, all of these different things at such a young age. How did that make you relate at such a young age to other people? having all of that knowledge coming at you from your study?
Well, it helped me not be rude. It helped me come from kindness. I would constantly ask, what would these great masters do in this situation, mm-hmm. instead of just being angry all the time? I had a lot of extra energy. I was dancing a lot, doing ballet and tap and jazz and, mm-hmm. you know, because I needed to get all that extra energy out. Mm-hmm. And I think it was also a way of staying away from home, you know, because you got to be at the dance studio. But I was very athletic, also in school. And I just think I had a lot of energy, and all of this helped me calm down. You know, so many of us have what I call a monkey mind. It mm-hmm. never is quiet. It never shuts up.
Yeah.
You know, which makes it hard for people to sleep and think, really, because the mind's just constantly roving. And I think meditation and reading every night calmed me down and let me redirect that energy that was just surging through my body all the time, because spiritual energy uses up the energy.
Yes.
You know, when you're learning and you're considering. And so it really changed my viewpoint on how I looked at the world.
Wow, that's fascinating.
You know, from survival to, and being the caboose, instead you can be the engine and you can drive your own world.
Yeah, it is. I utilized, for me, it was meditation, and both meditation and reading. I had a library of books that I collected from over the time, and I would find all these old books and grab them and read them and just read. And mine was meditation. I find that my mind, meditation helped me to control my thoughts. And once I was able to control my thoughts, then I was able to control everything else from there. I learned how to practice controlling my heart rate, where I can bring it up and down and all of that stuff. So I went a little on that side as well, started investigating how to utilize my mind to create changes within my body, because I believe that that's what happens to us anyway. And I believe that's why we bring in all the different diseases, because the energy that is in our, that we create from our thoughts, manifests in all the different manifestation of hormones being active. And when it has no place to go, it creates all of these different things. You have the ballet and everything else to help you move.
See, you're going to love my next book that when it comes out, it's Know the Name, Know the Health. And it's literally saying what thought patterns and what emotional feelings. The feelings go together with the thoughts to create the emotions, which therefore create the disease.
Yes.
And so if we understand that we've created it, then we are also empowered to discreate it so that we can uncreate it and get healthy again. And it literally goes through in the book what thoughts and what feelings combine to create which emotions, which therefore manifest as which diseases.
Wow.
And then how do you undo your own creations? But it's literally a book of, you're in charge. You've created this consciously, subconsciously, unconsciously, whatever, but you've created it. And if you acknowledge it and empower yourself, then you also know that you have the power to uncreate what's your creation.
Yes. I interviewed two young men last year. They have a program called Lads Talk Health, and they are doing tremendous work within the space of cancer patients. With the precept of what you're talking about with the book, they sit them down and teach them how to come out and heal themselves from their mind, because they created that disease. And so they're doing tremendous work, getting great results. I am so proud to know those two gentlemen. But here you are.
See, that's marvelous.
You are on the same you have that same insight as they did, and that's beautiful, because it is the truth. We need to get hold of how powerful our thoughts manifest things in our life. And I believe, as you stated, once we begin to understand that, I believe that we then know that we have the power to recreate another world the same way.
Well, what's interesting and different about mine will be that I hook everything up to the letters in your name. So which ones are you more prone to have experiences with versus which ones are you not?
Yeah.
You know, which ones did you inherit? So like in my birth last name and in your birth last name, we have eyesight mm-hmm. challenges.
Yes.
And that comes through hereditary. It comes through from our, you know, from our DNA.
Mm-hmm.
And it shows up in your last name. It shows up in my birth last name.
Wow.
So it doesn't surprise me that we wear glasses.
I was 40 something years old when I put glasses on for the first time. And I remember when I would get up in the morning and I would read the newspaper every morning before I did anything with my coffee and just sitting down reading. And one morning was different than the other. It was just so. And so I went to get my eyes checked, and he said that I needed glasses, and I cussed at him. I said, "Are you effing out of your mind?" He said, "No, you're effing blind." And prescribed my first set of glasses, and it was because everyone in my family wears glasses, and I was one of the last. And so
it's in the last name.
Yeah.
So it literally says you have a propensity to go in this direction, whatever's in your DNA. Mm-hmm. So are you going to activate that or are you not?
Yeah.
So I think we activate it at different ages based on different things that are happening. Mm-hmm. Like if we don't like what we're seeing in our families, I think we need glasses younger.
Yes. Yes, I think.
You know, because we've already shielded ourselves from not wanting to see what's going on.
Wow. Wow. That's some powerful insight there. I like that. Yeah. That's kind of a deep saying if you take that and look at it from the point of view of that I just saw. That is a powerful insight. Thank you for giving me that message.
Wow. Well, but hopefully that's what my whole book's going to do. And not only does it say, these are the thoughts, these are the feelings that combine to make the emotions that create the disease. Mm-hmm. This is the understanding that once you get this understanding that you can uncreate.
Yes.
And so I have gone in and out of glasses, which I think is really interesting because I was nearsighted initially. Then I got to where I didn't require glasses anymore. And I thought, okay, this is working. And now I'm farsighted. So now I need the readers, you know, and I think, okay. So before I could only see what was up close and I couldn't see what was coming out and what was next. Now it's the reverse. I can see what's coming next, but I'm missing what's coming close. And I thought, okay, I've got to go back and get the balance so that I can once again not require glasses.
Oh, man, I need to learn how to do that, because since you mentioned that it's hereditary in mine, I need to learn those exercises and how you're doing that. I want to talk to a little. You were telling me that as a child and gaining all of this knowledge, you began to develop aspects of empathy and all of these different things to be more reflective to the people outside of who you are, your family and so forth. How did, as a young person growing with all this knowledge, what type of fears did you have to deal with as an individual to overcome in order to take yourself to another level as far as an individual? As you begin to grow and gain perspective as to who you are, even getting into different studies, what were some of those fearful thoughts that you had to overcome as an individual?
It's interesting because I look at fear as simply a lack of information.
Hmm.
If we have enough information, we don't go into fear.
Yes.
And so if I ever felt fear coming on me, I would think, what am I afraid of?
Mm-hmm.
And if I stay afraid, I'm going to pull that to me to have to live and walk through it so that I get over my fear. Or what information am I lacking and who has that information or where is that information stored and where can I go see it?
Mm.
Where can I grab it?
Yeah.
So I have led a fairly fearless life.
Mm. Awesome.
Because I go by the philosophy constantly that when I'm doing my best, God does the rest. So what is there to fear?
Yes. In your studies, and I'm sure I studied some as well with the Bible, we looked at that character Job, and we saw that his family got wiped out in a day, his kids, everything. But we miss a line that he said. He said, "What I have feared has come upon me." And the principle yes. is you are calling it. You, whatever you create in your mind, and I try to bring this principle to light to people, you make it a reality. You pull it. You pull that energy. You pull those situations into your life, and it manifests. Because he made that statement, and he was getting up every day, sacrificing for his kids. Why? Because he was fear-driven. And as a result of living in fear and living, he brought that into his being, and the situation was created, and they all died.
And I look at that also a little differently, is that he put his job, his family, everything before God.
Mm-hmm. Yes, he did.
And so the big lesson was put God first.
Yes.
And when God is put first, then everything else, once he got that, and he got that understanding,
yes.
and he put God first, then he got a new family, he yes. got a new job, he mm-hmm. got new whatever. And so I look at that as the real lesson was, God is first in our lives.
Should always be. Well, the greatest of all commandments, Jesus said, is to love the Lord thy God with all thy heart and thy mind and so forth, and to love your neighbor as yourself. And so that is the progression by which we are able to function on this planet, is that once we have that connection to your God, your creator, you will learn how to love, because from that relationship, you can then love your neighbor as you love yourself. If you do not have that connection, then you're missing a great part.
What's really hard for a lot of people, Ken, is knowing how to love themselves.
Oh, yeah.
And what's really beautiful about being able to dissect every name to know exactly who you're talking with mm-hmm. is that everybody who's learned the system, that's taken my classes, they have, every single one has said, "Oh my gosh, all my judgments of somebody else has stopped." Mm. It has all stopped because I can see where their struggles are, what they came to learn,
yeah.
and that I'm not taking anything personally anymore, because it's not about me, what their actions are. Mm-hmm. You know, it's, and when they do something that you go, "Oh, why did they do that?" You can look at the name and go, "Well, look, it's right there. That's the way they chose to learn," you know? And so it's kind of exciting, because the other thing that happens when you can see somebody's name and who they really are and know how to interpret it,
yeah.
is that everybody wants you to be their new BFF. It's like, this person really gets me.
And how having that knowledge, while you are here on this planet walking as a house of all that information, that when someone comes, introduce themselves to you, that upon that introduction, that you have insight into them. How I can gather some of it from your childhood and what you had said earlier, but I want to hear how you how does that encounter go as you began to develop this relationship with this person, that you have more insight about them than in many cases they have about themselves?
Well, it's kind of cool, because when you're talking with somebody, you can give them a different point of view.
Mm-hmm.
And then they have the right to accept it or reject it.
Yes.
But it's not personal. It's yeah. like, accept it, reject it, doesn't matter. But let me offer a different point of view.
Yeah.
And so it makes conversations more interesting. It makes them go deeper at a deeper level. Mm-hmm. There's more intimacy involved in relationships. And I want to say there's more laughter and joy. You know, because we can just laugh at our, you know, we're creating distortions with other people.
Yes.
And we can just laugh about our own distortions and go, "Oh my gosh, how did I do that?" You know, and what was I thinking? And I think there's a lot of freedom when there's no judgment.
I absolutely agree, because if you, and this, I mention this principle to people all the time. I mention it to everyone that I can. When you begin to get an insight into who you are, you know who you are. You see all those dark things about you that no one else knows except for God. And so when you come to a place and you learn to love you absolutely love you for all of that thing that you have built up in your mind that you know who you are. If you can love you, you can love me. And so many people are afraid, and that's the world's problem today, because they don't love themselves. We see the results of that. We see that being how they abuse someone verbally or physically or so forth. Because if you love yourself, you would absolutely appreciate the newness of that individual in front of you and what they can offer in to insight to help you to be a better person.
But how we're treated by others, especially when we're young, can cause us to feel like we are not lovable.
Oh, yeah.
And the trauma. And the difference was when I started reading the Bible, because I felt that way. Mm-hmm. I must not be lovable, mm-hmm. you know? And so, and it didn't matter what I did or how hard I worked. And it just, I just felt like I must not be lovable. And I think there's different times in our lives that we just feel like we are not lovable.
Oh, yeah.
But when you have that foundation with God, you think, I am a cell in God's body, mm-hmm. and everybody else is a cell in God's body.
Yes.
And if I'm part of God's body, then just as we love our bodies for supporting us so that we're enabled to do what we can do with our physicality, mm-hmm. that if I'm in God's body, then every other cell is just as valuable and just as lovable. And I don't want to be the cancer cell in the body.
Mm-hmm.
So that means I've got to love myself, and it's easier to see everybody else is also worthwhile and valuable because we don't want to create a cancer cell in them.
Yes, yes. I love
it. We want to keep all cells in God's body healthy.
Yes, I love that analogy. When you look at it that way, it gives the gives us hope. And so how we behave towards each other. And it is my hope that we begin to gain some of the knowledge that you have talked about. So how did you come over that or overcame that? I know your relationship with God, you mentioned. How did you overcome some of that not worthy feeling that you had inside of you? How did that relationship with your God help you to manage that?
Well, it started even before I started reading the Bible, and that is in elementary school. I've always been a voracious reader.
Mm-hmm.
And in elementary school, I started reading biographies and biographies of great people.
Yes.
Because my thinking was, even as an elementary school student, was that if I can read about the great people that we think did a marvelous job with their lives and see where they said their mistakes were made, then let me learn from their mistakes. And so I don't have to make theirs. I can make my own brand new mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't have to repeat theirs. And so I think as you're reading the Bible, and there's so many stories of what's happening with people, and God still loved them, even when they really screwed up.
Yes.
So I thought, it doesn't matter if we really screw up, God loves us. And if God loves us, therefore we must be lovable.
No, awesome. I love that.
Even if you don't feel that way.
Yeah, that is a beautiful way to look at it. It is my hope that as people listening to you would grab hold of that truth that you talk about, because that's a freeing time when you get there. Most people are so afraid to be by themselves, to get a chance to allow their minds to ask the questions. They kind of crowd it with the TV and all the other things and the phone and all the different things.
Ken, you know how you can tell if somebody loves themselves?
How?
They love their alone time. But if people always have to fill the space with somebody or something, then they're running from themselves.
Yes. Yes, makes sense.
And then they don't know how to love themselves.
Yes.
And so sometimes when I would get down on me, I'd say, oh my gosh, how did I manage that one? Mm-hmm. And stuff. I would take myself on a date.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say, if I loved somebody else, how would I want to spoil them? How would I want to let them know that they were loved?
Yeah.
You know? And then I'd say, okay, I'm going to do that for me. I would take myself on a date.
I did that.
And I know. You know? And so if you can do that and enjoy your own company, then I think you enjoy everybody else's company that much more.
Yeah. Some of the best times I've ever had in my life was when I went on those dates by myself. It gave me a chance to, I did it on my birthday. I started as a young kid, I would take myself out on my birthday and I would talk to myself and say, okay, a year has passed. What have you done? How was your year? And all that type of stuff.
See, now that's cool.
And as I got older and I wanted to get to know who truly I was after I came out of my divorce, that I took myself on dates for about a year and a half. I met some of the best people. I met the owners of restaurants. I met the if I was there with someone, that would not have happened. I met some of the best waiters and waitresses because they were stunned that I was there by myself. And we would sit down and have some of the greatest, deepest conversation that I would ever had in my life. And it's priceless, my memory of that time. And I, as an individual, grew. I began to expand much of myself at that time. It was the most beautiful time. And I remember one of my friends, they kept looking at me and want to know why and, you know, what am I doing? And then it was several years later, he did the very same thing. And after he came out of it, he said to me, "Now I understand what you did and why." And it, you know, he testified that it was pretty awesome for him as well.
Well, and same thing with traveling. The majority of the world I've traveled by myself. And when you're traveling by yourself, you're free to have different people come up and have conversations or they invite you different places because you're by yourself. You know, it's really remarkable how, again, if you're traveling with somebody else, those things wouldn't happen.
Yes. So here you are, an author of so many books and you have such a rich insight as to the personalities of people through the name. And I actually believe that the name does that a person have some of the traits of that name. You could see it in their being. And I used to play with that a little back in my time. But I was reading some of your stuff and listening to some of your interviews, and to hear the insights that you have in it just blew my mind.
Well, it's fun. I have in my name a lot of observation skills. And then I was around a lot of people. I was teaching 150 students every year during the day, and then I was teaching college classes at night. So I would have 90 students first semester and a different 90 students second semester. So if you think about it, that's 330 students every year for a long time. And then you get to know their parents and their siblings and their friends that you're not teaching. And I was around a lot of people. And I think if you weren't around a lot of people, you wouldn't have had the insights or the ability to put together the patterns, because you wouldn't have had enough data coming in.
Yes.
You know, and then I only saw the good in people, and I only saw what they could be and where they could be going. And I only saw the good. And then I went into administration. And after I was an administrator, in my fifth year of being an administrator, I was an academic dean first, and then I was put in central office as a director of research and developmental programs. And then a superintendent asked me if I'd come help in another district. So she put me in a school as a VP. Okay. And so I got to discipline children, you know, when they were sent. And I would always take them through this process of all the different steps along the way. What were your decisions that you could have made a different decision and not gotten here? You know, look at all these time choice points, you know. And so, and then I would say, okay, this earned this many points, and here's the chart how you can earn back those points. You know, you've got this many demerits, and this is how you can earn them back. So like if you help the custodian, then you would earn back your demerits faster. If you went to after school detention, it was a one for one. But you help the custodian, then if you owed me 1 hour, you know, it would count like you help him for a half hour, it would count for that 1 hour.
Wow.
You know, and I had all different kinds of choices, and the child could choose how do they want to, you know, make this up.
Yeah.
You know, what's their style? and stuff. But I looked at it, and during that time period, it was really rough because I worked really long hours because you were disciplining children all day long. And the security people were really, they just loved it. They go, you know, they want to hate you, and they come out liking you, and it's such a confluence for them. They don't know, you know, here's this person who's disciplining them, and they like them, and oh my gosh, you know. And so, but it was nice because as the year went on, there were less and less students that I needed to discipline, and it lightened up. But at the beginning of every year, there's so many students, right, that you're helping. And then you do the majority of your job when all the students and the teachers are gone. You still have to get done all that work. So they're long days. But it gave me a wealth of information so that when I left that school, I could then go back and say, okay, where are the challenges in a name?
Yes, yes. Wow.
You know, where before I wasn't seeing those. I was only seeing the good stuff. And so I look at that and I think God puts us where we need to go to give us the knowledge so that we can complete what it is that we came to do.
Yes, I agree. So how did the first book, how did you decide to write the first book? How did that come about?
It's when I was going to the over 70 countries, I've now been in 77 with this. When I was doing that, everybody said, this is so fascinating, especially when I go around the room and tell them about themselves, just real briefly, everybody, you know, that all the skeptics would go, yeah, I'm skeptic. And then I talk to them about themselves and they go, how would you know that? I go, it's sitting in your name, you know? And then people would say, where do we find out more information?
Yeah.
And so many people said, where do we find out more information, that I thought, okay, I need to write a book. Oh. Now, the book took me 2.5 years to write because I'm a math major. Mm-hmm. And when I turned in the first draft, the editor that they gave me read it and called me. And he said, you write like a math major. He didn't know I was. And he goes, but you write like a math major and nobody's going to read this book. And I looked at him and I said, how does a math major write? And he says, every paragraph is so concise. You pack so much information into every paragraph that I had to read every paragraph 8 times to get all the information back out of it. And he says, I want every paragraph to be an entire page. And I thought, I don't know if I can do that. So then when I got through doing that, I said, this is now a very boring book.
Yeah.
You know, it reads like a textbook. Mm-hmm. It's really boring. And so I gave it to my daughter, who's a fabulous writer. And I said, what can you tell me? How can you help me? Mm-hmm. You know? And she said, Mom, I've heard you teach these classes and they're fascinating. And I said, yes, but I use everybody's name in the class as an example. Mm-hmm. And you can't talk about people behind their back in the book. You know, that's not cool. And so she said, well, use people out of history. So I started rewriting it using people out of history. And I realized I have to teach more history so they know what I'm talking about, because everybody doesn't know history. And I thought, this doesn't work. So then, as I was thinking about it, I thought, what people do we talk about? And I thought, we talk about people that are in books, that are well known, that are in movies and TV series. So I subscribed. I didn't even own a television set. But I subscribed to The Inquirer and People Magazine and Star and everything that's a gossip rag. I mean, I would read it like a textbook going, oh, here's a good example of this and here's a good example of that. And so the whole book now reads like one of those gossip magazines as you're learning how to do the names, because and everything's footnoted. Like, I didn't make this up about this person. It was right here. And so you've got history characters in there, you've got book characters in there, movie characters in there, and people. And so the whole thing reads like it's so funny because I rewrote the book 10 times.
Wow.
So after I rewrote it that way, then I sent it to friends and then they made comments. Mm-hmm. This part wasn't clear, that part needs more, or whatever. Anyway, every time I got the comments back, I rewrote it again.
Wow.
So I rewrote the book 10 times. But the good news is, I get notices now when people will write and go, oh, I just hated this. I couldn't put it down. You kept me up all night. I couldn't keep the book on. And I went, good. And it won an award for good writing. And I thought, isn't that ironic?
That is beautiful. Everyone that is listening to this story, go get these books. We're listening to how, and this is what I tell people about reading a book, is that you are having that private time with the author, where you are having a one-to-one conversation. You're comfortable in your space. You are, once you're comfortable, you're able to receive the revelation that is written within those pages even faster, and it will reside in your spirit being, and it will bear fruit. And so I just want to tell everyone, get the books, get the books. I know all the classes as well. Get into these classes, guys. Get to learn about who you are so that you and I can become effective while we are here on this planet, effective individuals to ourselves, in relations to ourselves and to others, and while we're here on this beautiful planet of ours. I want to thank you so much for coming by and sharing all the wonderful insights that you have.
Wow, it was my pleasure, Ken. I appreciate being invited. And, you know, in your name, you have the combination, the K-E, mm-hmm. by the way, is the best combination for leaderships, because when the people with the K-E lead, everybody benefits.
Oh, wow. Thank you. Thank you so much. Again, I want to thank you. We are going to make this available. I think it's on Friday so that the people can have access to you. And I just want to make sure that everyone do get to you, get into the books, get into the classes, so that you can become a better student of yourself and a better person in relationships to others. And let's make this place a beautiful place, guys. Thank you so much for coming by again.
Oh, my pleasure, Ken. And if you send me the link, I'll put it out on my newsletter also.
Excellent. I definitely will. Okay, then.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Good deal. Great meeting you. Have a marvelous day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Everyone who's listening to this broadcast, we hope to continually help you to learn how to embrace moments of darkness, because it is in the darkness that we learn how to develop and use our abilities to truly see those parts of ourselves, often invisible to us, in the light. It becomes your responsibility to navigate through all of your trials to find out who you truly are and begin your journey to loving yourself, which is possibly one of the most difficult things you will ever do in your life. To love yourself and to find the real you, but always remember to enjoy the journey. Thank you for coming by. Please subscribe. And if you can support us financially, we deeply appreciate it. You can do this by hitting the heart button. Until next time, invite your family, friends, neighbors, anyone that you can. You can hear us on Buzzsprout, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Apple Music, iHeartRadio, CastBox, Overcast, and many more.